Hey everyone, welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Friday, June the 1st, 2012. My name is Craig Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleRow.com, and joining us back at last from Switzerland, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how's it going?
Ah, guten Tag. No, I'm kidding. I didn't actually like learn any German out there.
I know that this Switzerland has like a French area and a German area and so forth. I assume you were in the German area.
I was in, there's a French area, kind of a German area, and an Italian area. And it's all Swiss, but I was in Zurich, which is more the German area.
Gotcha.
But they speak an interesting dialect of German in Switzerland, though, which I didn't – I mean, my sister told me about it, but I didn't really realize it. Apparently, like, a person who speaks natively speaks High German and a person who natively speaks Swiss German might not be able to completely understand each other in a conversation.
Ah,
which
yes.
I found – I mean, it's not just, like, awkward phrasing and stuff like that. Like, apparently it's like, what? What does that word even mean?
Yeah.
I spent most of my time in the German part of Switzerland between, we went and saw the Matterhorn, and I went to, Luzern a couple times, or Luzern, I should say, just because it was there, and it was something to go see, and the trains are awesome. Although I did go and take a day and go to, Lugano, which is on the Italian side of things.
Yeah,
and...
I know about that place.
Oh, good. Well, for those of you who don't, it's... honestly, like entering another country. I mean, you're still in Switzerland, but you kind of just go over this mountain pass and you come down and it's like, oh, we're out of the mountains entirely now and everything's all like lush and California-ish and such. It felt like you're stepping into Italy. And
yeah, but, that place is a popular filming location for movies shooting out there.
Really? I did not realize that.
Yes.
I can see why. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful down there. Stunning.
Awesome. Well, you missed a lot going on with the team. Not so much positive.
I wouldn't say I missed it, Greg.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
You missed it. You didn't miss it.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, everybody I've told when I come back, they're like, oh, man, what do you know about the Rockies? I'm like, honestly, man, I mean, I had internet access, but I was there with family, and there's an eight-hour delay, and the games were going on at the most random times, and I usually in the middle of the night, and I'm sorry, I'm not staying up to 3 in the morning to watch the Rockies play mediocre baseball. Then I found out that I wasn't staying up to 3 in the morning to watch them play bad baseball. And
yeah.
That's quite disheartening to come back and...
It got pretty bad. While you were gone, I believe, in 3 separate occasions, we had a 4-game, 5-game, and 6-game losing streak each.
Wow. At least yes. We didn't have a 12-game losing streak, right?
True.
Right?
We did not get quite to 12 games. But anyway, yeah, so you're obviously down on a lot of the news. Did you know Will Nieves is now with the team?
I did know that, because okay. I got him... for those of you who don't know, Raphael is one of our writers, and we'll have to have him on the show sometime soon here, but he has press credentials, at least used to, through a Venezuelan newspaper, and so he is on the Rockies press mailing list, and I have no idea how to get on that. I'd get on that if I could, but So anyways,
well,
we get all the...
At least we have somebody who is.
Exactly. So we get all the game notes, but we also get the transaction press releases. So I did make it a point to at least go through and check the press releases that they came out and just basically saw that people were getting hurt and like Eric Young Jr.'s bereavement visit and...
Yes.
So on and so forth. So yes, I was aware of the big things. Is there any prognosis on Ramon, I should add, Ramon Hernandez?
Not that I've seen. It was one of those instances where they tried to avoid putting him on the DL, and then like after 3 days they were like, yeah, probably better just take the 2 weeks and rather than just like waste a catching roster spot for X amount of time. I mean, they could have done it because they have Pacheco up who could have been a true backup catcher, but I guess they felt that it was just not the right thing to do. So.
Uh-huh.
But you did miss the press release from a couple hours ago that Jamie Moyer was designated
yes,
for assignment.
Yes, I was on the way home from work and then going to the grocery store, and I come back and you tell me the world's turned on its head. What is this? Actually, wait. Jamie Moyer needed to not be with the team anymore. That's what I said when we were talking about this. So
yes.
Honestly, it's no hard feelings. I thought he was fun when he was here. I enjoyed watching his starts. He's a class act. He's already done, like, charity work might be too strong a way to put it, but I know he's at least done community things already while he's been in Denver. And I mean, I don't know. Does another team want to pick up the 49-year-old gimmick at this point? And I mean, with all due respect to the man, he's been at least kind of okay. I mean, he had a good strikeout to walk ratio, and he
you could sort of say that for a 49-year-old pitcher, he did kind of better than you might expect.
Oh yeah, which I mean, kind of the problem is that's when he started. Well, that's what everybody would say when he first signed on with the team. Everyone's like, oh, man, well, we'll see how well he does. I mean, it can't be that bad for a 49-year-old. And I'm like, yeah, for a 49-year-old, but most 49-year-olds are completely out of baseball for the past 10 years. And if he's going to be on the field, I mean, it can't be like – this can't be just some gimmick where, like, you know, the midget guy who played back with the White Sox, I think, back in the 1940s or – something like that. like he can't just be this, like, super old gimmick. I mean, we're not a minor league team. We're not just going to put, like, you know, sign a guy to a one-day contract because he's a, you know, career whatever. But I mean, you've heard stories like that before, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if he's going to be playing for the Colorado Rockies, he needs to be able to pitch better than everybody else who's on the team, or you know what I mean, all his competition, and really give us more than just, hey, you're old, and hey, you're a mentor. Once, I mean, yeah, those things are good, but it's bad enough that we have Jason Giambi on the team with pretty much that role. As well, he's been pinch hitting well, but he's also 42, I believe, and he's just kind of the shoulder crayon's obviously the wrong way to put it. He's the mentor. He's like in the back on a rocking chair spouting off wisdom about batting stances and stuff like that. We can't really afford to have two of those guys. And if Moyer's not cutting the mustard, then I do think they've made the right decision. Mm-hmm. I just I'm rambling and I'm very sorry about that. The wheels are coming off like four starts and you could kind of see it.
Yeah, and I mean, our whole starting pitching system has been pretty weak this year. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to, like, single him out as particularly bad, but he was also, I mean, obviously the least of a commodity of all those pitchers. I mean, you know, we certainly have players that have been pitching as poorly as he has, but they might have a future, whereas, you know, he is, you know, riding off into the sunset, as they say.
Well, right along those lines too, getting rid of Moyer is beneficial to the Rockies because you can at least we got the, you know, the fun PR for him or whatever, but now Christian Friedrich is not as blatant of a designation or a demotion candidate or Alex White or whoever. We're forced to now play the pitchers we have. We no longer have a choice. We have to just use our guys. I mean, mm-hmm. Yes, we could still go out there and find whoever. But the point is more, it's we're enough last chance players this year. Let's give some first chance players this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, which I think is kind of what we saw coming as we left 2011, that was really kind of going to be more of the team's philosophy going into this season. I'm not sure yet exactly who's going to be pitching. We have Carlos Torres was the player who was recalled. But he might be serving as a long reliever capacity because we all know that even with all these off days we've had recently that our bullpen is still sort of, I mean, extremely overworked by the lack of depth that our pitchers are going into games. So that might be what they plan to do with him and then maybe recall Pomeranz or something like that for the start on Friday. But, of course, De La Rosa will be back in a couple weeks, hopefully, and will require another adjustment. So,
yeah, from what I saw from Dan O'Dowd in a Dave Krieger article today, he commented that Jorge De La Rosa is about five starts away from being able to help the major league club.
I've read three recently that there were three more planned starts for the rest of the his rehab assignment.
Well, in O'Dowd's words, I'm trying to find the actual spot. Dan O'Dowd's quote, "I banked on some things which obviously I'm accountable for with Guthrie and Chacin and hoping De La Rosa would get back around this time of the year, this week or next. Guthrie's been bad and Chacin got hurt and De La Rosa's probably still four or five starts away from helping us. So we're in a tough box relying on a lot of kids right now that have ability, but it looks like there's just a significant gap between their potential and their performance right now. And I don't think anything – I mean, he's – if you read this Krieger article, and I'm sure one of us will link it on, you know, Thursday or Friday or whichever day you're listening to it. Well, obviously you can't go back in time, but I'm sure it will be linked at some
Are
point.
Are you sure? I'm sure right. someone has figured out a way to do it by now.
Yes. They call him the Doctor. The point is that O'Dowd, he seems to be giving himself a very fair... He's basically saying the things about himself that I would say about him. I'm still not quite ready to call I'm ready to call him a mistake on the field from what he's given us, but the acquisition was not a mistake, and that's just one of the more blatant examples, because he was, we're paying him $8 million, and, we traded away Jason Hamill, who's having a very good season, in exchange for him, as well as Matt Lindstrom, who we could be using right now in our exhausted bullpen. But he gives himself a fair go over in this Krieger piece. He talks about things that just don't make any sense, like Coors has been playing like Coors of the 90s for some reason, and we're not sure why, and the pitching has been crappy upon crappy, and he's like, there's no doubt about it, it's been terrible, just terrible, and I want to say he throws a couple players under the bus, but it doesn't seem like he's doing it to cover his ass, he's just doing it to say, it's been bad. He said, let's see, where is it? He's expecting Guthrie and Chacin to be having mid to upper four ERAs, but at least you get the 200 innings out of them. Let's see, blah, 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 blah. Oh, here it is. This is the part that I was mentioning. And people were asking about, you know, how do we, you know, what do you do with a guy like Marco Scudero? Can we really lean on him? And is now that the young pitching sucking so bad, is Ramon Hernandez not worth it? And Dan O'Dowd says, that's kind of a misconception. Got Scudero because we didn't have a young second baseman to turn to. He's not comfortable. He said, I wasn't comfortable with going to Chris Nelson and didn't really have any other alternatives. Johnny Herrera's not an everyday player. The industry is bereft of second baseman to go get, so I don't know really what our alternative would have been there. He's saying, I even want to bring Scudero back. Not so much because, oh, we love your really poor second base production, but because, you know, you're not going to go out there and just crap everything up and do whatever. You know how to play baseball. You've been doing this for a decade now. We'd rather go with a guy who does know he's doing rather than someone who doesn't until we have to, which will be the case with Josh Rutledge in probably another year or so here.
Mm. Yeah, people have been talking. I mean, we've had a lot of discussion about Rutledge recently in the perps of voting thread. I still feel like people are jumping to conclusions that the team is that interested in having Rutledge contend for the job next year.
No, there's with Nolan Arenado, yes, they are expecting it because of just the ridiculous strides he's made. But I don't think that either one of these guys, this is more applicable to Rutledge, much, much more than Nolan Arenado. But if both of them need to start in AAA next year, there's really no shame in that. I mean, we shouldn't be, you know, look at this third baseman, Nolan Arenado. We thought that he was going to be the salvation of the Rockies, and he's starting in AAA. What a crappy spring. He's not going to be a good prospect. And Rutledge was never really that highly ranked of a prospect until he made some adjustments second half of Modesto and batted 400 for the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's a lot of upside there, but, I mean, let's just remember that Arenado is the one with the upside that we should be putting more faith in rather than Rutledge. Rutledge would be a very pleasant surprise if he is an above-average second baseman. I'll have to say, if he's a league-average second baseman, I'd be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, plus, we still have, having acquired DJ LeMahieu, especially, I would say that without obviously predicting the future, any other reacquisitions after after Scudero moves on, I would say he's still probably the closest thing to being the replacement second baseman next year.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're saying LeMay, right?
Yeah, just I mean, I'm not trying to say that he's the obvious candidate, but I would, from this point looking forward, and not with the obvious disclaimer that I don't know what the team is going to do in terms of moves between now and then, he stands out to me over Rutledge. And I mean, not necessarily an upside, but I mean, the fact is Rutledge is less developed, and also the big message for me was Rutledge was not invited to Major League Spring Training this year, which is what they tend to do with the guys they think are going to be contenders for a real spot in a couple of years. They did invite Chad Bettis. I believe he was the only 2010 draftee that was invited, but Rutledge was not. So I would have to think that he's probably going to get invited this year, but that might be all we see. He might be spending the rest of the season, you know, at double A or triple A for obvious reasons.
Okay, well, question for you then. Now, this is about, you've mentioned the invitation to spring training. when a player is invited to spring training, are they then put on the 40-man if they're not?
No, that's what a non-roster invitee is.
Okay.
Hence the non-roster part of that.
Yeah, well, I just never know when they hear that. When you hear reassigned to minor league camp, but usually with a lot of guys, or with some guys at least, that involves an option.
Right, but that's only if you're on the 40-man. And they actually, to their credit, did a good job this year of distinguishing which was which. So they would say stuff like, you know, what random NRIs did we have? Like, Brandon Wood has been reassigned to minor league camp, while Edgemar Escalona was optioned to AAA.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
okay.
It's the same basic idea. They are no longer in with the major league camp. They are now pitching in the minor league camp, but, you know, Escalona is on the 40-man, and so a move has to be made to do that, whereas, you know, the random NRIs that you collect, some of which were minor league free agents and some of which were prospects that we've developed that are starting to get close to consideration, those guys, there's no real transaction. The only thing that's official about it is they're no longer training with the MLB team.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for answering that.
Sure.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, the idea was that basically Rutledge was never with the MLB camp. They kept him down on the side fields the entire spring, which is what they do with, you know, 90% of the organization. And basically the point was if they had felt, I think, if they had felt, obviously, I don't know, but if they had really felt that he was an important piece to try out with the MLB team, you know, get him introduced to everybody and so forth, they probably would have gone ahead and done it. And instead they felt that at least one more year's time as a minor leaguer was going to be necessary. So
that makes sense.
Right. So, I mean, that's not to say the organization is down on him. I just don't think that they're chomping at the bit to give him the opening to the second base job next year. You know, they probably had the same concerns you did. You know, great second half to last year. He's certainly on our radar, but, you know, keep it up. Let's see one more year before we really give you that invite and give you a chance to win the job. So I would say the best case scenario for him is that 2013 spring training, he's there and, you know, maybe has an outside dark horse run at the second base job behind LeMahieu or whoever else is still in there. You know, we don't know who's going to be in that discussion. We don't know where any of the backup type guys like Nelson and Herrera are going to be in a year. All that stuff is still to be decided. So
yeah, definitely a lot to think about. And it's way down the line here. I mean, we only bring it up because we brought it up because it was an interesting topic. It was more just talking about O'Dowd and Scudero that we were really talking about.
Right.
But, I mean, I guess I missed kind of the big conversation that you and Paul got to have while I was gone about Dan O'Dowd's future with the team. And he actually talks about that, or quotes O'Dowd in the article as well, saying that O'Dowd's saying, yeah, this is baseball. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I might get canned at the end of the season, and that would be suck, but I do feel this team is in a much better place than the actual production on the field is indicating, and the next guy who takes over the job is going to be pleased with what we have here. And I think he's really just referring to the depth the team has, because they do have very solid depth at the moment.
Yes, in certain areas at least.
Yes.
I mean, our system is still sort of empty in first base depth, for example, but that's just one spot. And we're also fairly low in catcher depth now that Willene Rosario has hit. That's our closest prospect behind him is Will Swanner, and he's still, what, 2-3 years away at best?
I guess we consider Bryce Massanari any kind of a prospect, which most people don't.
Yeah,
but
I would consider several other catchers a higher prospect than Bryce Massanari, including maybe Tarleton.
I'm thinking more I guess he was split a season between Asheville and Modesto last year, didn't he?
Yeah, and now he's with Modesto, but he's been hurt. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not really saying he's like my Keith Weiser prospect. He's not really a prospect, but hey, he could make it. That'd be kind of cool.
Well, I think Keith Weiser was probably a little bit closer to a prospect than Bryce Massanari was. Maybe. I don't know. The silence is deafening.
No. Well, we're talking about Bryce Massanari. I mean, come on. Anyways,
Wait for the comment that's mad at us for talking bad about Bryce Massanari.
I love Bryce Massanari. He was batting like 400 into, you know, mid to late May last season with Asheville, and I was all excited about him. But I was like, oh wow, he's like 24 and still in Asheville. Prove him wrong, buddy. Prove him wrong.
All right, well, any other random prospect news to talk about?
Nothing that I noticed while I was gone, so.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Tyler Anderson, Paul and I mentioned Tyler Anderson at least once, so we've talked about that. He's been fairly good. His last start was poor, not entirely wholly discouraging, but he had a great first three starts in his pro career, and, you know, he'll definitely be a candidate even in his first season to be promoted to Modesto in a couple weeks here when they start filling out the lower teams with different players. So I guess there's that. And then Tyler Matzik is still, he relapses every couple of starts, but I mean, for the most part, his numbers are wholly improved, and so that's encouraging. I don't think there's much more really to cover beyond that. So, We can move on to at least, I'd like to at least bring up next week's draft. Neither Andrew or I are super draft experts. I tend to really get to know the players once we have them, you know, not otherwise, but, we have a few names here that the team has been connected to. The draft is, or the first round of the draft at least is next Monday. I don't know exactly what time it is, but I think they're trying to like prime time it or something like that. Like sometime in the late afternoon, early evening that goes on. Don't quote me on that. We might be able to look that up here. But obviously most of the draft will be taking place the following 2 days. Good because I will be free those 2 days and we'll actually be able to listen. But
I do find the way MLB handles their draft to be quite entertaining because they want it to be like the NFL draft so badly where people care and stuff, and man, like, nobody cares about the MLB draft. You and me and other baseball fans do, like, really crazy baseball fans, but come on, I mean, these guys, especially if we go for one of these high school players, I mean, when are we going to be seeing this guy? 5 years, maybe? Whereas the first rounder in the NFL draft, in the NBA draft, and oftentimes in the NHL draft, is a potential, if not an absolute lock, to be on the highest level club.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we don't have that, it's like, why do you guys care about this? Well, because baseball's a game of patience, and you get rewarded for that patience. And shut up, don't judge me.
Right. So we've got a few players we've been connected to. I mean, obviously there are a lot of mock drafts and so forth, and I think that the insiders, as best they can, try to at least factor in who they know we've been talking to, who they know we've been looking at. That doesn't always work out, because I don't think we were really linked much at all to Tyler Anderson last year. At least
a bit of a surprise, if I recall correctly.
At least not in terms. I mean, I'm sure that somebody somewhere thought he lined up with us well, and it's not to say that he was completely out of left field. But I think I remember we were linked to like Anthony Mio, and was his name C.J. Cron? Yeah,
I believe so.
Yeah, Cron. Those were the two big names for us, and we ended up going with Tyler Anderson instead. So, we might end up with somebody, we probably will end up with somebody who we don't even mention on the show here, but I know that we've got three players here to talk about, who we have, at least been tied to in some fashion. So let's break those guys down. Who you got, Andrew?
Okay, well, the first guy we were looking at is a high school outfielder named Courtney Hawkins. The simple analysis of him is that he's one of these guys that scouts like to call he's a phenomenal athlete, which always just kind of makes me chuckle a little bit. Of course you're a phenomenal athlete. I mean, what? No, I'm actually a big couch potato slug. I just happen to be able to sling a baseball, 96 miles an hour. You know, David Wells. At least back at one point. He looks to be the kind of guy who just hits the absolute crap out of the ball. The scouting report I found is posted on May 15th of this season, and through 29 games he was OPSing about, looks like, 1,500 plus, stole 16 bases and hit 10 home runs. I mean, and he's also a pitcher, which is very impressive as well. So, you know, you got a strong arm, potential power bat there. He profiles really well as a right fielder, good athletic and, very good athlete and strong arm. The problem is that we're looking at another one of these all or nothing kind of batters. He sits dead red fastball and will drive it and put it anywhere he wants to. It says he can hit all fields, but, when you get a secondary stuff, he has a big swing and miss potential. And, a lot of high schoolers will, especially with that kind of power. You want to keep hitting that. So it's a lot of risk for a guy like him, and plus there's a talk that he's committed to the University of Texas, so it's also going to be a difficulty for the Rockies. But, I mean, the guy's got a monstrous bat. He could, you know, but he's raw, very, very, very raw.
Mm-hmm. As is the case with many of our first-round picks. I mean, Kyle Parker, still considered a fairly raw player as well, so.
Yes. Well, Parker at least had a little bit of college polish in there.
Yes, I mean, like, that's
true. As a pitcher, you could look at someone like, I mean, Tyler Matzik's a bit of a unique case because of his bizarre delivery, but just people said he was very raw when he was drafted. Peter Tago, also very raw, but, you know, good upside there. So we'll have to see, you know, if the Rockies want to go with another safe pick, like a Tyler Anderson type or a Greg Reynolds or someone of that nature.
Wow.
That's just, isn't it funny?
No, I wasn't laughing at you. I was laughing at the game.
Something happened. I'm not watching. I'm
gonna yes. Anyway, let us talk about Max Fried, who a lot of people are considering to be one of the best, if not the best, left-handed pitcher in the draft who might fall to a position like 10th. I've seen him taken in at least two mock drafts by the Rockies, and so apparently they think we have some match there, connection, you know, and we do like to take left-handed pitchers in the first round of the draft. So, let's see, to talk about him a little bit, conflicting reports on the fastball. Some say it can get up to 94, 95, but the scouting report I have up right here says 92 is basically the top there. Has potential for a really good curveball and is also this is actually a funny note. I did laugh when you brought up that it said that Courtney Hawkins was a phenomenal athlete. It describes Max Fried as an above-average athlete. So what do you think that means?
Well, you know,
he's not phenomenal, but he is above average.
He likes his potato chips still.
Okay. He's like Houston Street and eats Sun Chips in the dugout once in a while.
Sun Chips are so good though, man. Huh.
Yeah, I almost bought some Sun Chips today, but I didn't.
Why didn't you?
Because I only wanted my Subway sandwich and I didn't want chips.
Well, I had Lenny's for lunch today. That was also very good.
Anyway, back to this pitcher.
Yes, pitcher.
Max Fried says he hasn't really developed a changeup because he hasn't needed one. So, I mean, I guess if you consider him a fastball curveball pitcher with maybe a changeup in development, that's kind of what you're looking at there. And then we have also, it describes, he says he has fairly good control, but it can get loose. But he does work in the lower half of the zone, which gives his fastball at least some sink. Doesn't really describe him as a sinker ball pitcher, but apparently that's sort of at least the direction that he leans. So, you know, they also consider him sort of a high risk guy. Though it makes a note that he is on the lower end of the high spectrum. He requires a lot of projection. So, I mean, there's sort of this, void that he has to fill, but at the same time, could be a valuable asset. So
he profiles decently well for the kind of guy the Rockies like.
A perfect fit, but he does fit into that mold, sure.
Yeah. So the last guy that we've been kind of linked to is a fellow named Kyle Zimmer, who is goes to the University of San Francisco. Based on that alone, don't pick him. Because you see San Francisco, and we don't like San Francisco.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's got good strikeout stuff, but he's a bit hittable for being a college pitcher looking to go early in the draft. There, he posted a 7.3 ERA in his sophomore season. He actually made a bigger name for himself than probably deserved when he was able to beat UCLA's Garrett Cole in the 2011 NCAA regional. Which is pretty exciting. He's having a much better junior season, not quite as hittable, only walked 7 batters all season in 46 innings, and, you know, good strikeout numbers. He's maturing as a pitcher with University of San Francisco. It sounds like he's, got, you know, good legs for a pitcher, can probably give you decent inning numbers there. He can, from the windup, he can hit 98 on his fastball, and he usually sits about 92 to 94, somewhere in that range. He's a two-pitch pitcher right now. He's got a plus fastball, plus curveball. He is 2+ pitches, not a 2-pitch pitcher. He's also throws a changeup, the kind of pitch he needs to develop more if he's to make it in the Rockies system. But 2+ pitcher, it would be interesting to see if the Rockies are linked to a guy like Zimmer here, because typically they've wanted to go for more lower upside guys with more stuff, and didn't want to take risks on 2-pitch pitchers. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're talking about the team that also now has Drew Pomeranz. So we've had him such a short amount of time, it's kind of hard to really say about him. But he's, you know, notoriously a fastball, curveball pitcher who they've had to work a changeup in on. So, Zimmer could be a potential number two starter, really. So there is upside with a 2-pitch pitcher. Be interested to see a guy like a Drew Pomeranz. Well, I guess Kyle Zimmer wouldn't be right there in the majors, would he? But you see my point. Yeah. He would be interesting to fit in the rotation.
Well, the thing about Zimmer and what sort of makes him a little bit less of an interesting note here, I think, is that he is expected to go earlier in the draft. I've seen drafts where he has been taken or projected to be taken later in the draft behind number 10 where we are, but I think everything that I've read about him says that he's probably taken in the sort of number 5 to number 7 range. So he would have to fall to us, sort of like Matzik did, in order for something like that to happen.
And Friedrich as well.
Yeah, although I guess I'm more comparable to Matzik, because that was I think we had the number 11 pick, and this is our number 10 pick, so it's sort of in that same range, whereas Friedrich was, what, 23, 24 pick?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's probably more likely that players like Hawkins or Fried are more likely to be available. But, you know, as I said, there's a lot of interesting people out there we could end up taking, and it could very likely be somebody we haven't even brought up here. So,
yeah.
Well, we are at 31 minutes. Do you want to at least take a quick little discussion about Dexter Fowler over these past few weeks?
Yeah, it's we can talk about him for a minute here. So
yeah.
Far this season, Fowler is posting a pretty decent, he's having a good season. He's batting .276 with a .373 on base percentage, a .553 slugging. That's a .146 WRC plus for the people who follow the park adjustments and the linear weights and all that. He's a distinct, very much an above average baseball player, and it's been, you know, fun to watch him, because he was the one, him and Chris Nelson were pretty much the only holdovers from the get rid of all the guys we don't like movement of the 2011-2012 offseason. where everyone's assuming that his huge second half is really what brought that on. But I still find it interesting that there's always things to nitpick about guys. There's been Dexter Fowler is one of our bigger strikeout threats, him and Rosario right now in our lineup. We have a much contact heavier lineup, and so that makes their strikeout issues that much more glaring. Beforehand, they just kind of blend in with the crowd and be like, oh, well, the Rockies struck out again, but now it's Dexter Fowler striking out.
Mm-hmm.
So people point out that, and they'll also get a lot of, well, Dexter Fowler needs to be able to steal more bases if he's to be a good baseball player. And no, Dexter Fowler being able to, you know, double on a lot of singles and always go first to third is much more important than his base stealing. He is still a phenomenal base runner. Well, let me take that back. He runs the bases very well. His base running instincts are not what we wish they were. So that's why I don't like the idea of trying to throw the stolen base pressure on there. His running instincts they're more for gliding across an outfield to catch a fly ball, not for, you know, zipping around the opposing defense.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's one of those players who's valuable on the bases because he can get to a top speed where, you know, he's that guy who can score from first base when most people would just hit third base. So that in and of itself is valuable, even if he's not able to steal the bases as well. So,
yeah, so that's it's been very, very positive to watch Dexter Fowler do the Dexter Fowler thing, because he's been very good, and I like it when players on our team are very good.
Right, and I mean, it's especially worth bringing him up because over these past few weeks, probably since around the time you left, the anti-Fowler brigade sort of broke out, and people were very down on him. Tyler Colvin was doing super well, so there were a lot of people, including Dave Krieger, who we mentioned earlier in this podcast, who were really into the idea of playing Tyler Colvin, playing the hot hand, if you will. Very different players, although they both sort of have that same weakness of striking out too much.
So I guess be noted that Colvin is considerably – he's – Dexter Fowler is sitting about a 22% strikeout rate for the season, which is right in line with his career numbers. Mm-hmm. And Colvin is at 28.3 two points above his 26% career average there. So if we're going to be pointing out strikeouts, we got to be careful about that. And Tyler Colvin also has a .375 batting average on balls in play, which is very good, but it's one of those numbers that's really hard to keep up. Mm-hmm. While Dexter Fowler has a .321 batting average on balls in play, he's getting about a little luckier than he should, but not that much. Remember, we play at Coors Field.
Indeed.
Colvin's not walking much. Fowler's walking a lot. Colvin is flashing a power glove, and he's definitely been good. I am only pointing out that he has not been as good as Fowler. He's got a slightly below average batting line, a very slugging inflated, OPS of, what am I looking at, about 795, which is, again, good. And this is a reserve player we're talking about. That's fantastic. Let's make sure that we keep the hottest hand and the guy who we have more riding on in Dexter Fowler than, kind of our, guy like Colvin is like playing with house money. I mean, we already gave up on Ian Stewart, so anything that Colvin and DJ LeMahieu give us is all gravy.
Sure, yeah. And then... He has, I'm not going to say that everybody's turned around on him spontaneously, but he did really well during the doubleheader game.
Yes, doubleheaders will do that.
And that got everybody's attention because he had two fantastic games, obviously got the walk-off hit on the second game. And I know, Andrew, you don't like it when we mention the games that are going on right now, but today Dexter Fowler is 2-for-4 with a home run and 3 runs batted in.
I mean, score keeps changing. This is the part of the game where we had the 4-run lead at first, and then we gave it up to 5, and it's like, no, not 5. And then I looked at the score, and we're up 12-5. That's where I am at the moment.
Like, yes.
So, anyhow, moving on from that, I like the guy. I want to see him do well, and I do think I am pleased to say that I think, from my estimations, he recognized some of the problems with his game and recognized the fact that the coaching staff wasn't entirely hot on him for a little while there. I mean, at least to what we saw with his playing time and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And to see him make the necessary adjustments, we heard a lot about him spending the extra time. And even if he's just playing politics here and trying to get in tight with Tulo and Giambi so he could say, hey, I'm working with the hard workers, whatever. It looks like it might be working, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah, maybe we'll be able to go through a season where Fowler picks himself up without needing the 3 weeks with the Sky Sox.
Exactly. He's bounced back from a questionable start very well. Last point on Fowler, well, I'll just pull up his splits real quick here. The month of March or April, about a .239, .316, .465, good for a .781 OPS. That's decent. It's an above average batting line, and despite what the defensive metrics may say, he's at least an average center fielder, if not plus. But his May numbers, batting .327 with a .444 on base percentage and a .673 slugging. That's a 1,118 OPS, 195 WRC plus. Those numbers say that he is, he is being productive at the rate of double that of an average baseball player for this past month. I know hot streaks come and go, but this is one that we need to ride and see what we can get out of Dexter Fowler.
Mm-hmm. I said coming into the season that, I mean, these past few years, Fowler was one of several players we had our eyes on for a breakout, and one of the things that was working against him here was that we traded away, Ian Stewart and Seth Smith and these other guys who were sort of falling into that category, and, with so many younger guys with no expectations yet, all that attention fell on Fowler. He was the only one left who was really in that position of, he's not a rookie anymore. He's got to, find himself and really make something of himself.
I almost thought that it was his last chance, personally. That this was if he wasn't beating the crap out of the baseball come the All-Star break. Let's see what we can get in the package with Dexter Fowler involved.
Of course, we have, as we always lament about, a front office that tends to hold on to their players maybe a little bit too long. So we might not have seen that. But at the same time, I think that that might be part of the reason why the attention focused on him has been so negative this year, and why I think that really it shouldn't have been.
Well, I just really don't see any of our replacements for Fowler being that great. I mean, yes, there was the cry for Tyler Colvin, but, I mean, really, Tyler Colvin? He's already, you know, a failure with one MLB franchise, and we're kind of counting on a magical rebound here, whereas Dexter Fowler is a guy we've known has shown improvements in his career, and, like, nobody's giving this guy a break at all. I understand that his play hasn't always deserved a break, but we give our breaks to guys like Tulowitzki. Is it just because he's on a giant contract? Oh, no, it's because he's had good seasons. You're absolutely right. We were patient during 2008 when he came up looking like a spoiled brat, and then he got, and then he tore his quad, and there were people saying, oh, my God, is Troy Tulowitzki on the new, you know, Angel Barroa? And, ugh. You know, is he the next Bobby Crosby? Is he, you know, this washout guy? And the Rockies, I mean, obviously, defensively, you don't have anyone better than him, except for maybe Clint Barmas. And yes, that's it's semantics. With Fowler, he didn't switch it until his major league career started. Or not his major league, professional career. And that's coming from the mouth of Mark Gustafson. He couldn't have been prouder because he said Dex used to not be able to hit it out of the infield. Couldn't even make contact from the batting cage, batting lefty.
And now that's where most of his power is.
Exactly. And he's a very, interesting switch hitter in that he's just so blatantly two different hitters. From the right side, he's much more, patience on base. From the left side, he is much more, swinging and hitting, you know, getting the power numbers. But young switch hitters kind of have to adjust to these things in the majors. And why, I mean, people want, you know, we're calling for his head, and Andrew Fisher took the rally cry, to back up Dexter Fowler's, you know, switching numbers. And yeah, he needed to spend some of that remedial time, and maybe it was that he needed to get his switch hit swing back on. And then, the big complaint about him then was that he's just, you know, not making enough contact or whatever. Well, he doesn't have the power we were hoping for. Mm-hmm. Well, he spent the offseason working really hard on, you know, on body strength while maintaining speed, and he has been hitting the crap out of the baseball. I mean, I do feel it may be embarrassing to watch him get sent down, but I do feel he has risen to meet his own even if it's self-created, he has risen to meet the adversity ahead of him and has come through it looking better than he did before. His switch hit splits actually reverse themselves. He did worse on the right side, but the point is, he's like, hey, look, left-handed pitching, I'm hitting it. And then, you know, his numbers leveled out, and then this next season his numbers are, you know, better than I would expect. But that's kind of the point.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe he has that superstar talent still. Just we don't have anyone else. This isn't hurting us per se to let Dexter Fowler go out there and get better.
Speaking of Andrew Fisher and rallying calls for Dexter Fowler, Andrew's rock pile this week was titled "Rocky Should Bat Fowler Leadoff and Leave Him Alone."
Yes.
So, yeah, obviously there is a hope that Fowler's performance here over this past couple of weeks certainly sticks with him, and you know he can be a valuable tool going into the next few years of the system.
Absolutely, whether by play or by trade value. And one other thing too, if we're going to debate about the fact that he batted second through the minors, he seems to have done better in the leadoff spot in his career.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing. And you actually probably missed this because you were gone. Andrew Fisher was not talking about Fowler batting leadoff because he was hitting second. Jim Tracy dropped him to the eighth spot the last 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do remember that. I do remember seeing him in the eighth spot. The point just being more that when Stephen Drew for the Arizona Diamondbacks, for example, he bats best leadoff. And I say, well, his numbers play much better as a two or four hitter. He's your best hitter. I think it was D-back skins, Phil over at, the AZ Snake Pit said, yeah, you're right. And we all agree with you, but every time they move him to the two or the four, he turns into terrible. And so they put him back in the leadoff when he starts hitting again. He's like a crying baby with his bottle. So maybe Dexter Fowler's in a similar boat where just put him somewhere and leave him there and let him do it. And mm-hmm. I believe he is. I'd have to pull up his splits, but I don't think anyone cares. I think the point kind of is made.
Yep. Well, I think that about wraps everything that we wanted to get down here on the show. So you have anything else?
Nope, I have curry waiting for me downstairs.
Nice. Okay, so we will be back once again next week. Paul should be back with us. He was out of town this week. That will be Friday, June the 8th. And until then, take care.